Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 11, Text 38. Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. This is the divinity of the personality of Godhead. He is not affected by the qualities of material nature, even though He is in contact with them. Similarly, the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord do not become influenced by the material qualities. Purport. In the Vedas and Vedic literature, Shruti and Smriti, it is affirmed that in the divinity there is nothing material. He is transcendental, nirguna, only the supreme cognizant. Hari, or the personality of Godhead, is the supreme transcendental person situated beyond the range of material affection. These statements are also confirmed even by Acharya Shankara. One may argue that his relation with the goddesses of fortune may be transcendental, but what about his relation with the Yadu dynasty, being born in that family, or his killing the non-believers like Jarasandha and other asuras directly in contact with the modes of material nature? The answer is that the divinity of the personality of Godhead is never in contact with the qualities of material nature in any circumstances. Actually, he is in contact with such qualities because he is the ultimate source of everything, yet he is above the actions of such qualities. He is known therefore as Yogeshwara, or the master of mystic power, or in other words, the all-powerful. Even his learned devotees are not affected by the influence of the material modes. The great six Goswamis of Vrindavan all came from greatly rich and aristocratic families, but when they adopted the life of mendicants at Vrindavan, superficially they appeared to be in wretched conditions of life, but actually they were the richest of all in spiritual values. Such Mahabhagavats, or first grade devotees, although moving amongst men, are not contaminated by honor or insult, hunger or satisfaction, sleep or wakefulness, which are all resultant actions of the three modes of material nature. Similarly, some of them are engaged in worldly dealings yet are unaffected. Unless these neutralities of life are there, one cannot be considered situated in transcendence. The divinity and his associates are on the same transcendental plane, and their glories are always sanctified by the action of Yoga Maya, or the internal potency of the Lord. The devotees of the Lord are always transcendental, even if they are sometimes found to have fallen in their behavior. The Lord emphatically declares in the Bhagavad Gita that even if an unalloyed devotee is found to be fallen due to a previous material contamination, he is nevertheless to be accepted as fully transcendental because of his being engaged 100% in the devotional service of the Lord. The Lord protects him always because of his rendering service unto him, and the fallen conditions are to be considered accidental and temporary. They will vanish in no time. Etad ishanam ishasya prakriti stho pitad gunaihi na yujyate sadatmasthaya yatha buddhis. Here is stated what might appear to be a redundancy. Redundancy means you say something, it's already clear, it's already understood. If you say that the king of this country is of this country the king, that's an example of a redundancy. So, to state that the supreme controller, Ishasya, is Isha, of who it's been described, the Ishanam of the Isha is his Ishasya. So to state, Etat Ishanam Ishasya, Prakriti Sto Pitat Guna, to state that his control is demonstrated by Nayujyate Sadatmasta, that he's not affected even when within the modes of material nature, it should be clear that if he's the controller of everything, then he's certainly not controlled by the modes of material nature. But it's being pointed out to make clear, because previous to this it's been described how the Supreme Lord, known as Krishna, appeared to be like a king in Dwarka, and specifically it stated how his coquettish wives would play with him and seduce him, or attempt to seduce him, and he would reciprocate with him in such a way. So it, as is often, we find in Bhagavatam or throughout the Vaishnava literatures, that even though the basic thesis is given at the beginning that the Supreme Lord is transcendental, from time to time there's a little reminder, just in case we forget. Because the tendency might be there to think that we hear that, oh, that doesn't sound very transcendental. He's going with his wives and like an ordinary householder. So a reminder is there that he is the controller. And even though he's situated among the modes of material nature, he is always above them and the controller of them. He's not like a conditioned soul who is prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvashaha ahankara vimuhatma kartahamiti manmite. He's not like a conditioned soul who thinks, due to his false concept of life, thinks himself to be the doer. I am the controller. Krishna, when he's within the modes of material nature, that means when he appears within this world, he's never, that's the point, he's never actually within the modes of material nature. But he thinks, kartaham iti manyate, he thinks I am the controller, and that's true, for him it's true. So he's not in Maya when he thinks so. But for anyone else who thinks so, then they're simply in Maya under the illusory potency of the Supreme Lord. So this is the very nature of his being the Supreme Controller, that he controls, and he is not controlled. Maybe an even more important point for our understanding is what's stated here also, yata buddhis tadashraya, that those who are under his shelter, they share in the same consciousness. They have the same, they're also not affected by the modes of material nature, even when they are present within them. So the queens who were apparently behaving coquettishly with Krishna, well, they were, but they weren't within the three modes of material nature either, because this is all ananda chinmaya rasa. This is all enacted by the spiritual potency. So to understand this about the Supreme Lord is essential, otherwise we can't understand him about him at all. Not being able to understand this, the non-devote or the semi-theists, we can say, people who they verbally accept that there is a God, but they don't accept that he can have pastimes. So they're not really theists at all. They have a concept of God which is not really God at all. So when they say, that's why we have to ask the atheists, if you say you don't believe in God, or which God don't you believe in? Because the God that you don't believe in, we don't believe in him either. The God that they've been, that any intelligent person would not believe in, we also don't believe in him. The God that is just some non-entity practically, because they say you can't define him in any way, and he's not a person, but you pray to him, but he's not a person. So the concept of God as is promoted in this world is not actually Godhead. It's not the understanding is not correct. So people say they believe in God, but they they deny him having, that he can have pastimes, or even if they say that, even those who purport to be devotees of Narayan or Ram, but say that, well, Krishna we can't accept, this, he's immoral, then they're also not properly theists. Their understanding of Godhead is incomplete and therefore imperfect. Actual theism means to accept Krishna who dances with the gopis, who induces Yudhishthira to lie, who himself induces, who takes the side of the Pandavas, who steals butter, who passes stool and urine, who comes as Nrsimhadev and rips apart Hiranyakashipu out of his causeless divine mercy. So unless we can accept this, then we deny. If you say God cannot do this, God isn't like this, then we're not actually theists, because we don't accept God as he is. There's a common saying nowadays which is used to justify immoral behavior, that you should just accept everyone as they are. In other words, if someone does something, you just accept it. Whatever they do, you just accept it. But we're in the conditioned situation, so we shouldn't accept people as they are. We should change them as to how they should be. But God, we should accept him as he is. And if we don't, then he doesn't accept us, and we end up accepting ourselves as God in 84 lakh species of life. So this Bhagavatam teaches us to accept Bhagavan as he is. That's the only way to accept him, not how we think he should be. Rather, we should think of him as he wants us to think of him, rather than thinking that God, he should adjust himself to the way I think he should be. This is another form of atheism, posing as theism. That's why, again, I don't have much faith in these interfaith conferences, because they don't, first of all, you should have faith. They don't have faith. If you don't have faith in the personality of Godhead, then what is it? You may say, I believe in God, but what's the use of saying that? You believe in God, you have to accept Krishna. This is God. That's what Prabhupada said, used to say, you know who is God? You don't know? Then I tell, here is Krishna, accept it. This is God. But because people don't know what is the difference between spirit and matter, the first train, they'll jump up to discussing God. First you should go to Bhagavad Gita, first lesson, you're not this body. Understand what is the difference between spirit and matter. But jumping over that, they want to go to discuss who is God, what is the nature of God, what is the nature of devotion. It's all useless without understanding what is the distinction between spirit and matter. Because whatever we say about God or devotion, it's all going to be on the mundane platform. If we don't know what is spirit, if we don't know what is the basic distinction between spirit and matter, then all our so-called faith in God is simply mundane. And as long as we're in mundane consciousness, then to the mundaner, Krishna will seem mundane, because their idea of spirit is something ineffable, undefinable. Go wash your hand again. Yeah. Don't put it on your mouth. Training. You have to go to the spiritual world. No putting the hands on the mouth. But not only is Krishna not undefinable, but rather he defines everything else. Everything depends upon him. He is the absolute truth. That means he is that from whom everything else emanates. So everything is defined in his terms, but because we are frog-in-the-well philosophers, we think we have to define everything in our terms. And therefore the Pacific Ocean cannot fit in the mind of the frog whose intelligence only can accommodate a well, or as the saying goes, you can't accommodate an elephant on a dish. So, to the mundaner, Krishna will appear mundane. He cannot but appear mundane. He appears to be, because everything is mundane. Even what they call spiritual, it's also mundane. Many people say to us, well, we're interested in spiritualism. Yeah, I also go to this Ravi Shankar and Ashram. And they have no idea what, if you had any idea what spiritual meant. I mean, even materially, anyone who's got little intelligence wouldn't go to such people. But what they think of spiritual is a more sophisticated manner of cheating, that's all. So they have no idea what is spiritual like. So when they see Krishna, they must think mundane. He's going with women. I also go with women. So Krishna must be mundane. He tells lies. Oh, then I'm better than Krishna. We can accept Ram because he's very moral. We can't accept Krishna. This is absolutely mundane outlook. They have no idea who is Lord Ram. People who say like this. So, at least among the devotees, they accept Krishna. Yes. Krishna is stealing butter. Wonderful. Worship. Anyone else steals? Throw him in prison. Cut off his hand. A Vedic injunction. Don't throw him in prison. Cut off the hand. But Krishna, worship him. Krishna is dancing with others' wives. Krishna is not dancing with others' wives. Whoever thinks Krishna is dancing with others' wives in Maya, Krishna never danced with anyone's wife, because everyone is his wife. Anyone who thinks I have a wife, they're in Maya, because everyone belongs to Krishna. So, but the materialistic people cannot see this, because they're seeing from this side of reality, which is the perverted reflection. So you'll see everything back to front. I am good and Krishna isn't. Or like I was saying, many devotees, they accept, yes, Krishna, what he's doing, there's something special, yes, we accept that. But they don't understand the devotees. On the neophyte stage, archaya me vaharaye pujasya shadhe ayandate natad bhakteshu chanyeshu sabhakta prakriti smita. On the materialistic level of devotion, which is not really divine, and real devotion didn't really begin, because bhakti begins on madhyamadhika, when one actually comes to the transcendental platform. But on the neophyte platform, one recognizes the Supreme Lord, but he doesn't recognize the devotees. So he may think, yes, yes, Krishna is stealing, Krishna is lying. All right, that's very good. That's his leela. Many people know this word leela. They misunderstand. They don't know what it means, but they have a misunderstanding of what it means, and they can fit Krishna's activities into their misunderstanding of leela, so they can explain Krishna, yes, leela. But they cannot recognize devotees. That devotees, some devotees may also perform some activities which appear to be quite mundane. And I haven't come across in my time in Bengal, I had pretty good exposure to all different upper sampradayas and this and that, but I didn't come across such people as were mentioned or severely decried by Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur and his Chaitanya Bhagavat, who said that those who accept Lord Chaitanya but don't accept Lord Nityananda, I kick on their head. So that such people don't seem to be around anymore, or prominent. But it seems at the time of Vrindavan Das and shortly after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were some people who would say, well, we accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Bhagavan, but not Nityananda Prabhu. Because, you know, look at the crazy things he used to do. How can we accept him as Bhagavan? He used to sometimes go naked and then he'd walk up to young girls in Navadvipa and tell them, in sannyasi cloth, and tell them he wants to marry them. Just go in someone's field and start milking the cow. How can you accept him as God? And sometimes getting so angry, kicking Shivananda Sen in the chest. How can we accept him as Bhagavan? But in this regard, the that must be in Chaitanya Manga, I believe. I'm not sure. Anyway, Prabhupada quotes it that Jadavyama Nityananda Shurabari Jai Tatapi Shema Nityananda Rai. That even if I see Nityananda Prabhu entering a wine shop, I will still consider him my worshipable Lord, Nityananda. They say, well, that seems a bit too much. But that's to be understood. If he enters a wine shop, there's some reason for doing that. He's Balaram, he's sometimes known as what materialists would consider a drunkard. Or he may be going there to preach. He's ordered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to deliver all the people without discrimination. So he's famous for that. Anyway, the point is that one should not misunderstand. There may be so many misunderstandings about the lives of Mahabhagavats. Here in this purport, it's mentioned about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, among whom the first two, Rupa and Sanatan, were known as Dabir Kasa and Sakar Malak. Their names were changed to those of Muslims. So once Jashumati Nandan Prabhu, who's in Gujarat, he told me, he asked Prabhupada, why is that their names were changed? Prabhupada said they must have adopted some of the habits of the Muslims. Something must have been there. We don't know how much. Sanatana Goswami is worshipping Mother Mohan. His deity is still there at Malda near Gaur. He was residing there. But they may have grown beards or adopted Muslim habits to some extent. We don't know how far. But even in the lives of some great devotees, there are some things which, if we see, we'll think, that person couldn't be a devotee. Bilvamangal Thakur, he was addicted, head over heels in love with a prostitute. The Prabhupada said it was his girlfriend, but he said, in our country we call a prostitute, in your country you call girlfriend. So we generally, Prabhupada said prostitute, but once he clarified, it was like his girlfriend. She may not have been paid, but anyway, whether you pay or not, they get all the money one way or another, so it all works out the same. So he was addicted, but then he changed and went to Vrindavan and became the great Bilvamangal Thakur, who composed the Sri Krishna Kanamrita, which was so dear to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Is when he came to South India, these two books he brought, Sri Brahma Sanghita, which is the fifth chapter of Brahma Sanghita, which gives us all the siddhantas of Srimad Bhagavatam in a nutshell. Hastamalak, as is said in Sanskrit, amla fruit in the hand. And Sri Krishna Kanamrita, which gives all the rasa vichar, or rasa niryas, or the appreciation of rasa, as given in Srimad Bhagavatam, expanded upon. So Bilvamangal Thakur wrote this. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he extolled these two great literatures. He must have come across so many literatures when he was traveling in South India. So many manuscripts. But these two he had copied and brought back. So Bilvamangal was such an exalted devotee. But prior to that, he was a worldly, materialistic enjoyer, or so it seems. In the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wrote his autobiography, which, on the request of his other Vaishnava son, he had two sons who took up Krishna consciousness as the central focus of their lives. One was Lalita Prasad Thakur. So on his request, Bhaktivinoda Thakur composed his autobiography, from which it is clear that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was eating meat and fish at some point in his life, and even appeared to be enjoying it, which should not be broadcast. He told in the beginning of this to Lalita that this should not be published. It should not be given to persons who do not have faith in me. But it's been translated in English and distributed. It's widely available, because in the modern idea we think that everyone should know everything about everything. It's everyone's right, and we should understand everything. But, you know, Thakur, why did he say that? Because people who don't have faith, they won't understand. They'll misunderstand. So it's better for them that it's not taught. And we think that, because we think that understanding means we have to have all the information, then we can understand. We shall amass all. This is the idea of modern academic progress of knowledge. We'll amass all the information and then we'll understand. So this is impossible. First of all, you can never get all the information about anything. If you want to get all the information about one piece of dust, which you can't even see, I just picked it up, it's so small. You can put 100 scholars all their life studying, you can't get all the information about it. It's not possible. And even if somehow or other you were, still you wouldn't understand anything about it. Because you can't understand, we can't understand anything because we're looking from the wrong perspective, which is from that of a materialistic enjoyer. Whereas, we can understand everything by following Krishna's directions. Yomameva samuho janati purushottamam sasarva vidvajatimam sarva bhavena bharata. We can understand everything by understanding Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And if we don't accept that, then we can't understand anything. So by our modern empiric method, we think that everything should be told to everyone, and in this way, this will increase the progress of human society, human civilization. We'll progress more by getting more knowledge, and we'll understand more about everything. But as is obvious, people, by getting this information that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was eating meat, they misunderstand it, or they can't understand it. So, how are we to understand this? How are we to understand any of these things? All these different points. Well, how do we understand that Krishna is passing stool and urine? It's right there in Bhagavatam, stated. Well, is that mundane? No, everything Krishna does is spiritual. A Vaishnava, whatever he does, is completely spiritual. A Vaishnava does not have a material body. Prabhu kahe, Vaishnava deha prakrita kabunai. A prakrita deha Vaishnava Chidanandamai. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sanatana Goswami that the body of a Vaishnava is always spiritual, aprakrita, non-material. Aprakrita Vaishnava. So, because Sanatana Goswami, what happened as he was coming from Vrindavan to Puri on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, then due to unclean water passing through the forest. At some point he could only access unclean water. Then he got a very severe rash of weeping sores, which means wet. There's all sores. It's always oozing with some pus and horrible things like this. So that's pretty horrible, isn't it? But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that he wanted to give up his body because he's thinking it's so miserable and I can't do any proper service in this body. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that your body is... Then the point came that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to embrace him whenever he saw him. And Siddhartha Goswami was saying, this is... Therefore he wanted to give up his body. He said, I can't do any service for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and I'm committing offenses because every time he embraces me and then I contaminate him with all this horrible wet sores from my body. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him that you don't have a material body. Your body is entirely spiritual. Now, spiritual body means what? Prakrita Deha Vaishnava Chidanandamai. The body of a Vaishnava is completely spiritual. Chit, with chit comes sat and ananda. So where's the ananda in a body that's got weeping sores? It's painful, it looks horrible, it smells horrible, it is horrible. So how could Sanatana Goswami understand that his body is, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is telling him that his body's completely spiritual? And he's saying it's horrible. And then after telling him, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu embraced him and all the sores went away. So what are we to understand? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying the body is completely spiritual, but it has weeping sores. And actually his body is complete. There's no question of anything but Sanatana Goswami being completely spiritual. He's not a person of this material world who came to this material world due to his previous karma. From his activities, it's complete. It's clear. And our acharyas have verified that he's one of the eternal gopi assistants of the Lord, who's come again to serve Radha Krishna as he has appeared as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then how is it that, then again, his body, he is completely spiritual. His body is not material. Then how does it, then all these questions come, how does it appear through a mother? When a child is born, it's a mess. It's all blood and all kinds of horror. I haven't seen it. I mean, I've seen a cow being born. But I suppose it's the same for a human being. Lots of blood and messy kind of thing. So, what is that? And then having weeping sores. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, your body is completely spiritual. Not only the body is completely spiritual, but the activities of Vaishnavas are also completely spiritual. But the point is that they may appear to have some contact with material nature. And therefore materialistic people may doubt. But the same thing is true about Krishna. That's the point being made here. Yatha buddhis tadashraya. Krishna appears to be mundane. But it's understood that he's not mundane because he is Krishna. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he demonstrates that by, for instance, lifting Govardhan Hill, making it appear that the sun had set over Kurukshetra one day and then showing that actually it hasn't set. And in so many ways, swallowing a forest fire, and in so many ways. But the devotees, we don't see them doing things like that. And because they're not God, after all. Devotees are servants of God, so they don't do things like that. So we could say, well, Krishna, he lifts Govardhan Hill and he swallows forest fires and he all kinds of things that make us, give us good ground to accept that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And not only that, but all the Vedic evidence points towards that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we can accept that he's transcendental to material nature. And even his apparently material activities, they're all of the nature of ananda chinmaya rasa. They're all lila, which are being conducted for the sake of increasing rasa. But how are we to understand that with devotees? Because we don't see any sign of their divinity as we see with Krishna. We don't see because we have mundane vision. Because we may accept Krishna as God because he lifts Govardhan Hill and jumps off the Pravarshana Hill with Balaram. Was it 80 miles? Something 80 miles high, things like that. If we accept, then we have to accept him as God. But devotees, we don't see that. But what we can see if we have the divine vision is this very point, tadashraya, that they are fully under the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahatmanas tumang partha daiving prakriti mahashutaha bhajantyananya manaso gyatva bhutadimabhuyam. Fully under the shelter, what are the symptoms of a Mahatma who is fully under the shelter of the divine energy? Fully under the shelter of divine energy means not touched by the material energy. What is the symptom? Bhajanti ananya manasa. Full absorption in service to Krishna. Gyatva bhutadim avyayam. With full knowledge of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is the symptom of a great devotee. So everything a great devotee does is understood to be entirely spiritual, even if we don't, with our tiny brains, understand what is there, that everything they do is entirely spiritual. But because their consciousness is fully absorbed in serving Krishna, it's understood that they're not ordinary persons. They're under the shelter of the internal energy of Krishna, who protects. Krishna, internal energy means Radharani and all her assistants. They protect the devotee. This is different to the process of karma, jnana and yoga, where one has to apply himself to the process. And as much as you apply yourself to the process, that much you get the result. But if you stop, if there's some fault in your execution of karma, kandya activities, you get the result of that. If you do something good, you get the result. If you stop doing something good, or you make some fault in your activity, just like King Riga, then you get the bad result. There's no one there to protect you. Similarly, the jnani, they can go up to the parampadam. They can go up to the supreme atmosphere. But because they neglect to worship the lotus feet of Krishna, they don't have any shelter. And therefore they fall down again. It all depends on one's own endeavor. But if one takes shelter of the Lord, then even if he does something wrong or makes a mistake or is apparently not in the position or is for some time away from bhakti, sheltered by the Lord, under the shelter. So the devotee doesn't fall down in the same way that that shloka is there in Bhagavatam. The non-devotees, the devotee does not fall down like a non-devotee, because the devotee is specifically sheltered by the Supreme Lord. So a devotee doesn't actually go away from bhakti, even if he appears to do so. Similarly, if anyone says that Bhaktivinoda Thakur ate meat, then we can say he's wrong. What is eating meat? It means a materialistic, a desire to enjoy the material energy, to do something for one's own sense gratification. But Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is entirely transcendental and spiritual. So there's no question of him doing anything at any time but serve the Lord. He came from the spiritual world to serve the mission of the Lord. That is absolutely clear from his activities. You take any one of his songs, and we can immediately understand that he's on a level of transcendence so high that we could hardly even imagine what is there. And then, and then we'll say that, well, he was eating meat. It's not possible. It's not possible. Someone, it may appear like that, but then we have to go deeper and see. But he himself is writing that I ate meat and I was enjoying eating this fish. What is to be understood by that? This must be some design of the Lord. Something is being shown there. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come as Patita Pavana, Mahavaranya Avatar. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come to show how even the most fallen can come to the highest level of Krishna consciousness. So, his devotees, they may apparently show some even horrible activities. But we can understand that they have actually no contact with that activity. They don't actually do it. Now we may say, well, from the empirical outlook, they're doing it. It's right there. Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote himself. So he did it. It's clear. It's evidence. But that's only from the empirical vision, which we cannot see with that vision. We have to see with the adhoksaja vision, or aprakrita, from the other side of reality. From our side of reality, from the side that we see from, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was eating meat, Bilvamangal Thakur was associating with a girlfriend, illicit sex, our own Srila Prabhupada was a businessman, who was maybe attached to his family. It may appear like that. But if we see from the other side of reality, which is actual vision, Krishna conscious means to see the universe as Krishna sees it, then we can understand that if we see the whole eternity, how these devotees are on the topmost level of transcendence that cannot be imagined even by great yogis and tapasvis. They cannot even begin to understand what is the eternal service of these great devotees. And then we'll say they're eating meat, associating with girlfriends, and having business attachments. No, we can. That is a speck. That is not reality. That is a speck in time. Just a tiny point, which has got nothing to do with their actual transcendental existence of always being absorbed in serving the Lord. So then why this? Why does it come like that? Why do they have this? This can be understood. This is explained by our acharyas as asura vimohana lila. It is also lila. How can you say that's lila? It's lila which is meant for, means everything they do is conducted by the internal potency of Krishna, nothing by the external potency, therefore lila. But it is specifically designed to bewilder the atheist. You may say, well, that's just some excuse. But then we find that one avatar of the Lord, his whole lila is only, everything he did was only asura vimohana lila, namely Lord Buddha. Sammo hai asura divisham. Atakalo, what is that? Atakalo pravrishite. Sammo hai asura divisham. Buddho nam nanjana sutta kikateshu pravrishite. In advance, bhavishyati, Vyasadeva has predicted that his whole lila is meant for sammohaya sura dvisham, for bewildering those who are envious of the devotees, of the seers. So his whole leader is that. And we have, Krishna also does. How Krishna left this world. He died being shot by the arrowhead of Jara. You see, Krishna also died. You can go to the place where he was killed. So that's very nice for the atheist. Yes, you see, this is the place where Krishna was killed. That Krishna gives them fuel for their fire of envy, which they will convert into the fire of lust. So Krishna gives them fuel for that. You want to think I'm dead? Okay. So, but then you just consider, is that possible? That Krishna, who himself maintains, creates and destroys all the worlds, who could not be defeated in hundreds of battles that he fought against all tremendous forces. Single-handedly, he destroyed the forces of Jarasandha 17 times. And then he was killed by the roughly fashioned arrowhead of a hunter that landed in his foot. You know, if anyone shoots you in the foot, no one dies. Of course, you could say poison, that's possible. But even then, Krishna is fully spiritual. The story comes in Mahabharata, but it's explained in Srimad Bhagavatam. For those who want to go beyond the topics of Mahabharata, the presentation which will appear superficial to the superficial in Mahabharata, that is explained for those who are not superficial, those who are sargrahi, those who want to know what is the actual essence, then they come to Srimad Bhagavatam, which is sarvaveta itihasanam saram saram udaharitam. It is the extracted essence of the essence of all the Vedic literatures. And in that, Krishna, we find Jara comes up and he's very sorry. And he says, doesn't matter, it's my lila. I wanted like this just to give some fuel for the fire of the envy of the empiricists. He said, we have empiric evidence that Krishna died. It's right here in the Shastra. So Krishna said, okay, you want material? Okay, here's my body. You can bury it or whatever you want. And in his original, or as then he went, that means his original transcendental form, went to where he came from, where he'd also never left, back to the spiritual world. So the Supreme Lord and his devotees, under the they perform this Asura Vimohana Leela. There may be some difference because Krishna is the Isha, he is the controller, and the devotees, they're not the controllers. So Krishna, he may be aware that this is my Leela, and the devotees may not be. They have the feeling that Amar Jivan Shada Pape Rata Nahika Punyara Lesh. They have the feeling, there's no piety in my life, I'm simply the most sinful person. They may actually feel like that. I'm always performing sinful activities. But actually they're under the Leela Shakti of the Supreme Lord. So the great devotees, they never perform any material activity. They never have any thought but to serve Krishna. And that is, even if apparently they perform some, in their previous activities, they perform some, something which appears immoral or adharmic, it is seen from their later activities what is their actual situation. Because no one, just by doing a little sadhana, is not expected that you can suddenly start to write as Bhaktivinoda Thakur did and preach as he did. It's no amount of sadhana. This is clearly coming everything Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote is very clearly coming from a very intimate servant of Srimati Radharani, which he himself revealed himself to be. Now, it may appear that even a great devotee, there may seem to be compelling evidence that they were affected by the material energy, just like Bilva Mangal on his way to Vrindavan. Again, it seemed he was trapped by desires for womanly association. But again, we have to understand this is all the Leela Shakti of the Lord, which puts great devotees in a situation whereby they appear to be in mind, like Arjuna. How could Arjuna be so bewildered that he identified in terms of the body only by this special arrangement of the Supreme Lord, which was very quickly dissipated? Arjuna heard Bhagavad Gita and immediately, Nashto Moha Smriti Labdha. Again, he understood what is the actual situation. Whereas other people are reading Bhagavad Gita all their lives and they still don't understand one word of it. So what's the difference between Arjuna and an ordinary reader? Arjuna is only apparently put into Maya for a brief period just to serve some purpose of the Lord. This is how it's to be understood. So in one sense we can say, yes, Arjuna was illusioned. In one place in the Bhagavad Gita purport, Prabhupada writes that Arjuna was a conditioned soul in the darkest region of ignorance. So it's true from one point of view, but from the deepest level or highest level, in English you say both. In Sanskrit and also so, that Arjuna is never an illusion. It's only a temporary display for serving some purpose of the Lord. Therefore, jadapi ama nittananda shurabari dai tatapi shema nittananda rai. If we see something which appears wrong in a great devotee, we should understand that our understanding is wrong. Something wrong with our understanding. And even when we say, well, what about we see in our movement sometimes devotees, they're on a very high level and they fall down. Well, if they were actually on a high level, then that fall down, it's also to be understood as something temporary. If they weren't actually on a high level, then that's something else. But actually, anyone who has the mercy to engage in the activities of this Sankirtan movement, you should understand they're a very special person. Anyone who has the opportunity to do such service is not an ordinary person, even though in many ways they may appear to be a very ordinary person. And it may appear that they revert to that position of being an ordinary person after some time, because they just see he's just an ordinary person, not so great. But what desire of the Supreme Lord gave him that opportunity to serve in that way, which we didn't get? So we may say, well, they're actually all neophytes and this and that, but persons who have contributed to Srila Prabhupada's mission, they're not ordinary persons. Even if they appear to be in some material difficulty. Now we may not be on the level of, we don't know, we can't say, because who are we to say, but they may not be from the level of the very highest or greatest devotees. It would appear like that, although appearances can be deceptive. But at the same time, we should understand that apichet suduracharo bhajate mamanandabhag sadhureva samantabha. Krishna doesn't say if someone is misbehaved, but their intention is to serve me fully, then they're a sadhu. He says, even if they are most misbehaved, Suduraja. If their intention or purpose of life is bhajate mam ananya bhat, to worship me fully with, they don't really have any other desire in life. But maybe due to some residual sanskars or impressions, they may revert back to some lower level. But if their purpose is to serve the Lord, then they're to be considered sadhu. And what is the test of the kshipram bhavati dharma? That they don't go away from the service of the Lord, despite being temporarily set back or going through some difficulty, but they go on with their determination to serve the Lord. And what is it? Shikram Bhavati Dharmatma? Shashvat Shantyam Nigaj. Then he will attain. He definitely, Krishna says, such Shipram Bhavati Dharmatma. He will again quickly come to the proper position. So we have the tendency to condemn those who are going in the Sankirtan movement and then after some time slip, especially if they're in a very high position. And it does cause disturbance in Vaishnava society, no doubt. But at the same time, we should understand that they are very special people, no doubt. Now, if someone becomes offensive, that's something else. If they actually become, just like one of the most prominent leaders of our society for many years has now initiated many disciples and then went away. He actually became offensive to Prabhupada. So this is not at all laudable. But nevertheless, he did do so much service to Prabhupada, and that also is not to be forgotten. So for his offenses, no doubt he'll have to suffer. He'll have to suffer being away from devotional service, maybe for a long time. But that service that he's done will never be forgotten. The effect of that will always remain. So if one commits offenses, then maybe away from devotional service. What is done is not forgotten. That will be remembered. And for one who has some sensual difficulty, or Krishna says that's hardly even to be considered if their determination is to serve me. Of course, if one goes on and on, we have to treat a person according to their, in terms of their previous activities, and in terms of their previous activities in devotional service, and in terms of their present position. It would be incorrect to worship someone who was on a worshipable platform but presently isn't. But at the same time, we should understand that if they're trying to serve Krishna, then they are to be respected, and Krishna will certainly help them. This is clearly stated throughout Bhagavatam. Navayajano jatu katanchana vichat mukundase ganya radanga sangsrutin smaran mukundagi upagohanam puna That Narad Muni states that, who himself appeared to be in a fallen situation for some time, temporary. Sometimes people tell the story of Narad becoming a monkey or all this, but you shouldn't say such stories. That shouldn't be taught. But their devotee who's once tasted the nectar of Krishna consciousness, they cannot leave that actually. They may appear to be like a pakka materialist, but the memory of their service to Krishna is fresh in their heart. The memory of service to Krishna is in everyone's heart, but in most people's heart it's very, very deeply buried. But in the heart of those who have very sincerely served Krishna recently, then they may attempt to forget Krishna, but it's not possible for them. And especially because they are Mahatmanas Tumang Prata Daiving Prakriti Masha, because they've come under the shelter of the material and of the spiritual energy. Then the spiritual, if they try to go in the material energy, then the spiritual energy, who is the controller of the material energy, who is only her expansion, she'll give some special nice treatment. The spiritual energy will act through the material energy in some very specially unrelishable ways, so that the person who is trying to forget Krishna will very soon remember that I have no other shelter but Krishna. So they don't actually leave the shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. They may think they're doing, and they may appear to do so, but Krishna doesn't let them go. Not by force, but by giving the taste of his lotus feet, the taste of his... They can't forget that, because they've experienced it. So we should be very careful in our understanding of Vaishnavas, and very careful about what we say to others about Vaishnavas, and what should be told to others, what shouldn't be told, and how we should understand. We should be careful about all these things. This book, Vanshidas Babaji, I brought out. I was told by Dati Shagabra, I got all the information from him, that he was smoking the strongest flavor of tobacco. They would have to find out this particular variety. And he would smoke it through his hookah. Blub, 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 like this. So that quite a lot of devotees became disturbed upon reading that. And then Bhakti Vaibhav Puri Maharaj, he told me, for putting that in the book, I should have been shot. And then Bhakti Pramod Puri Maharaj said that actually he never smoked. So I thought that, well, no, he did smoke, it's a fact. And now I understand, he didn't smoke. Etadishanam ishasya prakriti stopitad gurai na yujyate sadatmastaya yatha buddhistada ashraya. This is the divinity of the personality of Godhead. He is not affected by the qualities of material nature, even though he is in contact with them. Similarly, the devotees who have taken shelter of the Lord do not become influenced by the material qualities. Are there any questions about this? No. Can you get this?
In the teachings of Ramanuja or Madhva Sampradayas, they accept that despite the advanced level of devotion, even maybe liberated level, a devotee, yeah, the body is still a result of, unless they give up this body, they are not freed from prarabdha karma. So from the point of view of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, yeah, can we tell they were mistaken?
Yes. Not only mistaken, but it's offensive. It's opposite dhamma. According to this, if they're eternal associates of the Lord, the Lord has thrown them into material nature. You see, it's a state of consciousness. One may have, just like we say Prabhupada's body was material. Why material? It got sick. We say Prabhupada's body is spiritual. Then why spiritual? It got sick. Prabhupada was affected by the heat and the cold. Actually, Prabhupada wasn't. Sometimes, often he would be, but then other times, just he would show his opulence of not having any contact with material nature. But often he would put on warm clothing when he would go out for a walk. He'd become sick. What spiritual? Spiritual is that he's every every atom in Prabhupada's body is surcharged with the attitude of service. He's only serving. That body is only for serving. There's no thought of anything but service to Krishna, so the body is entirely spiritual. We have the concept in Gaudiya, some concept like that, Vastu Siddhi and Swarup Siddhi in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, that the complete perfection is when you get an entirely spiritual body in the spiritual world. But that we could say from Gaudiya Vaishnava understanding, which means actual understanding, there is no, it's only a technical difference. Because if it's siddhi, if it's actual siddhi, then siddhi means to be fully absorbed in Krishna without any material motive. And if it's, if one's not on that platform, then it's not siddhi anyway.
From the Lord. On the other hand, we deal with the deity as we deal with matter. Like, we don't wash the wooden murtis and like we're dealing with them like with, but in substance it's a spirit.
It must be that this is a prakrita. He is a prakrita, and this is a leela of the Lord, that he accepts this form and becomes dependent upon us, apparently dependent upon us, which he shows many times. So be careful dealing with deities. So many instances, hundreds, thousands, aren't there? Deities reciprocating with the devotees. So many. Shubhag Maharaj, this is in London, and maybe it must have been 1976. Sometimes he was dressing the deities, and then sometimes this pin he'd accidentally scratch, then he himself would find. Krishna would scratch him back. He told me once. He would find on his hand some big scratch. Where it came from, didn't know. Well, he knew. But no ordinary scratch. There's so many, hundreds and thousands of incidences when the deity reciprocates with the devotees. Otherwise, why are people going to the temple? Yeah, then?
Examples are given in Shastra that the Lord is just like an actor. Acting and is not seen. He's actually not seen.
No, well, the example of an actor is that he's seen, but he's not understood who he is.
Yeah.
That's the seen, but we don't recognize him, who he actually is.
But, yeah, this analogy kind of supposes that the actor actually is not the activity of a person who acts like kind of. It kind of brings.
Well, it's an analogy. Maya javani kakchanam agyad hokshajam avyam nalakshasi murha dusha nato nat yadharo yatha. And the verse before that, namashe purushang tvadyam ishvaram prakrite param nalakshasi murha dusha nato nat yadharo yatha. Is that right? No, I got that. It's the same. I got alakshang sarva bhutanam antam mayaravas anta bahiravastitam. So here it's being stated that he is the Supreme Lord above the platform of Maya, above the three modes of material nature, who is within and without everything, but he is not seen as such by foolish people. He is not recognized by foolish people as such. Now, so this is from the platform of seeing him as Ishvara, that he acts like an ordinary person in the eyes of persons who don't understand him as Ishvara, as the Supreme Controller. And if we come to the platform of of understanding him as Lila Purushottama, then again that again there's a different vision. This is Kunti's vision. Her vision of Krishna is Aishwarya Mai Drishti. So she sees that his basic nature is that of the Supreme Lord. And if you go higher, then they'll have a different vision. So ordinary people don't recognize him as the Supreme Lord, she's saying. And that could be also said of the Vrajavasis. But then they cannot, that is not Muhadrisha, that is not due to their foolish vision, but that is due to their Atyutkrisht Drishti, topmost excellent vision.
This example is to make one kind of like, as you mentioned, for Aishwarya concept of God.
Even though he performs activities which don't seem like those of the Supreme Lord, he is still the Supreme Lord. There are so many prayers there. Gopya dede twaig. Anyway, Yashoda Mai is chastising him, and Krishna becomes afraid of her, even though fear personified is afraid of Krishna. So she gives some examples. So it's very difficult to understand.
This analogy can be twisted by some.
Can be, this analogy can be twisted. Therefore, we hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the Bhagavat Parampara, not in the Adhyakshik Parampara, the Parampara of empiricists. Everything can be twisted. Everything can be twisted, and everything is twisted. Therefore, we have to go to those who are not crooked, those who are straight. Ananya bhakti, straight vision, not this way or that way. Another question?
To consider Vaishnavas non-Vaishnavas as Vaishnavas,
both activities are non-Vaishnava. So we may consider that we are Vaishnavas, but if we consider non-Vaishnavas as Vaishnavas, like some Sahajiyas, and we think they're also great devotees, or if we think of Vaishnavas as non-Vaishnavas, then we ourselves become non-Vaishnavas, then we again become like the Sahajiyas. Only Sahajiyas will do like that anyway.
This saying that we should respect all Vaishnavas is commonly misused by Sahajiyas
to justify their sinful activities in the name of Vaishnavism. There's another point we should be very careful that we say, well, anyone's a great devotee, he may fall down, but still he's a great devotee, but that doesn't mean that can justify any non-Krishna conscious activities. Nor does it mean that the non-Vaishnav, the apparent non-Vaishnav activities of persons who were previously acting on the properly situated Vaishnav platform, nor does it mean that those activities should be considered laudable. It should be understood clearly, this is not proper. Laudable means worthy of praise, acceptable, proper. Okay.
Someone has some faults. but he doesn't want to, you know, to reform himself. So what our attitude should be towards such devotee?
One who has faults but doesn't want to reform is insincere. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, we should keep it just as we are advised to keep a long distance from animals with horns, so we should keep a long distance from insincere persons. They're dangerous. First we should see if we are sincere. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.